A few months ago, I encouraged all of you who have smartphones, and my guess would be that would be most of you here, are listening to this service, to make sure you have a Bible app. Have you downloaded a Bible app? They're free, and they're wonderful because, you know, the scripture says, "Thy word have I hid in my heart." If you download it, you can add, "and also download it to my cell phone." You carry the word with you wherever you go. And one of the best things about a Bible app is that every morning at 7 a.m., you receive the verse of the day. It's 7 a.m. Eastern time. If you're in Hawaii, it comes in at 2 a.m. If you're in Jerusalem, it comes in at 2 p.m. But at 7 a.m. Eastern time, you receive the verse of the day. On July the 4th at 7 a.m., this verse popped up on my phone. "You were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only don't let this freedom be an opportunity to indulge your selfish impulses, but serve each other through love." Written by the Apostle Paul, a man who was not free. Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. You were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. But as I said a few minutes ago, there's so many millions and millions of people in this world who are not free. I thought about something the other day, and I guess I've never really realized this. But have you ever thought about the fact the great majority of the biblical narrative takes place without freedom? So much of the biblical story is about people who are enslaved and oppressed. The Hebrew people were enslaved by the Egyptians. And even when they made their way out of Egypt and into the Promised Land, they were constantly having to deal with the Canaanites and the Jebusites and the Amorites and the Ammonites and the Termites and all of these different people. That was funny, by the way. And then finally the monarchy was established and they had a few years of freedom, but then there was division. They had a civil war and you had Israel to the north and you had Judah to the south. And then the Assyrians came and destroyed Israel and enslaved the people. And then the Babylonians came and destroyed Jerusalem and took the people captive. And that was the context of the scripture that Jim read, "By the waters of Babylon, we sat down and we wept as we remembered our freedom." Now think about this. The entire New Testament, from Matthew all the way to the end of Revelation, takes place without freedom. Because the mighty Roman Empire oppressed people, they controlled people, they taxed people without any type of mercy. That's why the message of Jesus was so powerful. Because it's a message of hope, it's a message of liberation, it's a message of freedom. But we must never forget the entire New Testament takes place in the context of no freedom. It was the Romans who crucified Jesus of Nazareth. It was the Roman Empire who crucified Simon Peter. It was the Roman Empire who crucified the Apostle Paul. They were not free. But the dream of freedom, especially for people who don't have it, the dream of freedom is powerful, it is transformational, it is redemptive. And that is why in the Old Testament, one of the most remarkable things in the book of Isaiah is that after the Babylonians, you remember from biblical history, the Persians came. And they were led by their emperor, Cyrus the Great, who was the world's first benevolent dictator. Because Cyrus the Great, even though he controlled people, he believed in basic human rights. He believed in the freedom of religion. In fact, his legacy is so great that if you go to the United Nations today, there is a replica of what we call the Cyrus Cylinder. The original is in the British Museum in London, which is the world's first great declaration of human rights, the worth and the dignity of every human being. He not only granted religious freedom to the Jews and allowed them to go back to their home, he financed the rebuilding of the temple. He was a good guy. That's why Isaiah, and this just blows my mind, that's why Isaiah calls Cyrus the Great God's anointed. He calls him the Messiah, a man who did not know God, a man who did not worship God, is called the Messiah because he believed in the freedom of religion. But you know, he didn't know God, but God knew him. And God used him. And if you go to the final book in the Bible, the book of Revelation, you know the context of that book? The Apostle John, who lived longer than any of the 12 disciples, is in exile. His freedom has been taken away. He's in prison on the island of Patmos, a little small island off the coast of Greece. The island of Patmos is so small that right in the middle of the island there's a mountain. And you can climb to the top of that mountain. It doesn't take a lot of effort. You go to the top of that mountain and you look around 360 degrees and all you see is the water. You are surrounded by the sea. They did not need walls and bars to imprison John. He was imprisoned by the sea. And that is why in his grand vision, in which he sees a new heaven and a new earth, you remember what he adds? Remember that line? He said, "And there was no more sea." I'm not in prison anymore. I have been set free. Joyce and I, on this recent sabbatical, have gained a deeper appreciation for freedom because we spent a lot of our time in former communist nations. We were behind the old Iron Curtain. And we spend a lot of time with people who know what it's like not to be free. We were in the city of Berlin, which is an amazing city. It's a beautiful city. It is a huge city. And if you go to Berlin, one of the most impressive buildings is the Reichstag, which is their governmental building, like the U.S. Capitol. It's where the legislators meet. It's where the government does their business. And at the Reichstag, when you go and you look at it, and it's been redone in a beautiful way following the war, there's something on the sidewalk beside the Reichstag that most people wouldn't even notice. There are a number of slate slabs. They're about this high, and there's one after another after another. In fact, there are 96 of them. If you didn't know what you were seeing, you'd think it was a bicycle rack. But each one has some writing on it. Back in the 1920s, in the early 1930s, when Adolf Hitler was gaining his power, there were a number of members of the Reichstag, 96 to be exact, who had the courage to speak up against Hitler. They had the courage to sound the warning and to tell other people this man is a dangerous man. They realized that their freedom was in jeopardy. They dared to oppose Hitler. When Hitler gained complete power, one of the first things he did was he had every single one of those 96 men imprisoned, tortured, and executed. Every single one. Today, you stand at the monument and you admire people who stood up for freedom. And they saw the threat to freedom. Then when you leave the Reichstag, you walk down to the back of the street behind the Reichstag, and you take a right, and you're about a block away from the historic Brandenburg Gate. But there's something interesting about this street, because you see a line of pavers about this wide that run down the middle of that street. Again, there's no sign telling you what they are, but those pavers represent the Berlin Wall. And it is a strange experience to walk across that street, to walk across that line, and to realize that here I am in freedom. Here I am without freedom. Here I am with liberty. Here I am with oppression. Here I am in hope. Here I am in fear. There's a fence that runs along the sidewalk beside that street. And we saw a bunch of white crosses on that fence. Each one of those crosses represents someone in East Berlin who wanted to be free so badly, who prayed for freedom. They would dream of freedom. And they tried to escape East Berlin, but they were shot and they were killed. 137 to be exact. And you know the interesting thing, which really is not surprising? Many of those were East Berlin guards. They were guards who sat up there in that guardhouse with orders to shoot and kill anyone who would try to escape. But all they had to do was look a few feet over, and they would see freedom. They would see a land that was totally different than the one that they experienced. And they wanted to be free, and they tried to escape, but the great majority never made it. We left former West Berlin and we stopped at the Glenick Bridge, which probably doesn't mean anything to you, but you may know it as the Bridge of Spies. Steven Spielberg brought this story to life a few years ago with Tom Hanks. It's the story of the United States pilot Bruce Powers, who was flying the U-2 spy plane and was shot down over the Soviet Union, and he was taken as a hostage. His freedom was taken away, and of course the story is about how they negotiated the exchange of Powers with another prisoner, and the exchange took place on the Glenick Bridge. And actually, if you look at that movie, that final scene takes place, it was actually filmed on the actual bridge. So we got off the bus and we walked across the Bridge of Spies. When we got back on the bus, our guide said, "I don't know if you've thought about this, but for the rest of your trip, you're going to be in former communist territory. You're going to be behind the Iron Curtain." We heard one story after another. We heard a lady who told us how desperate she was for food, but how basic things like bread, milk, just basic staples of life were either impossible to find or so expensive no one could afford them. She talked about how the government controlled everything about every person. They read your mail. They monitored the media. They controlled the media. But the interesting thing is, in the city of Tegau, which is close to Wittenberg, you were close enough to Berlin that you could pick up a Berlin television station. So the people could watch Western television. But there was a catch. In order to get the Berlin station, you had to turn your antenna in the opposite direction from the communist station. The city would monitor the television antennas. And if they found out your antenna was pointed in the wrong direction, you were reprimanded. One of the saddest stories we heard was in Dresden. Dresden is another beautiful city that has totally recovered from both the Second World War and the Cold War. It's a great city to visit. The guide that we had in Dresden started by telling us, she said, "The communist robbed me of 30 years of my life." She told us, she said, "You know, sometimes you hear people say, well, the communists would not allow you to go to church." She said, that was not true. She said, "My family has always been a family of faith. We always went to church. But the communists had other ways to get back at you." She's 6 years old. Kindergarten. First day of class. Little girl goes to school for the first day. Her teacher calls her to the front of the class. And in front of all the other children, she says, "Boys and girls," and she calls her by name. She believes in a superstition. She believes in a God who can perform miracles. "So, boys and girls, if this is true, we're going to ask her to perform a few miracles for us this morning." The children laughed. The teacher laughed. She was humiliated and ridiculed as a 6-year-old child. She said, "When I would go to recess, no one would play with me. When I would go to lunch, no one would sit with me." What she did was she channeled all of that into academic success. She became the number one student in her class. And under the communist system, you could only go so high, and then just the ones who excelled academically would go further. She was number one in her class. But it was when it was time for her to go to a higher level of education, she was denied because her family was a family of faith. You see how much we have to be thankful for? We're free. We're free to come and worship today and every Sunday without any coercion, without being ridiculed or humiliated or intimidated, because we are free. Oh, how we need to thank God for this freedom. Oh, how we need to protect this freedom. But I'm going to tell you the hardest thing about freedom. This is the last thing. When you don't have freedom, it's the greatest thing you want. But when you do have freedom, the tendency is to deny that freedom to others who are not like you. Reformation, they wanted to be free to worship. When they were finally free, you know what they did? They ran everybody who didn't agree with them out of town. People say, well, the United States of America was founded on people who wanted religious freedom. That's true. But you know what happened when they got here and got that freedom? They quickly denied it to everyone else. To be truly free means that we allow others to experience freedom and to express freedom Brothers and sisters, you were called to freedom, but never let your freedom be an opportunity to engage in selfish impulses, but rather serve one another in love. We are blessed because we are free. Let us exercise that freedom and enjoy that freedom and protect that freedom as we are one nation under God. Let us be free.